one of the I learned from Paul was, you know, to really just try to keep things simple. And as we kind of built that into our culture, it has allowed us to really leverage something simple. It is, when you're trying to train 600 people on a process, it's a challenge. And so the simpler the process can be, the faster I can replicate it across a larger network. As you grow, you need new processes. And then when you go to redevelop the process, and that just tends to start bloating processes inherently. And so it is one of, our traits that we are constantly trying to simplify processes. When I need to roll something out, I need to roll it out to 600 people and get compliance on it. And we all know the 80-20 or 70-30 rule, you know, that 30% of my guys are going to get it real quick. 70% of them are going to take 3 or 4 attempts before they can, you know, master whatever it is that we're trying to roll out. You do that, you know, with, again, 600 or 700 people, your rollout time is very lengthy. You get a small shop that's got, you know, 25, 30 technicians, they can pivot and implement things a lot faster than we can.
Yeah, keep it simple. You don't got to do everything, but you got to do something. Isn't that right, Chad?
This is To The Point. A Rhino Experience. Voted one of the top home services marketing and operations podcasts. Cutting through the bullshit and getting to the point.
Hey, what's up, To The Point listeners? It's your boy, Chris. It is post-Memorial Day weekend when we're recording this podcast, and I had a lovely, refreshing time in the great state of Montana, big sky country. And Chad, I know where you were that weekend, and you were down at good old Sweetwater Lake, sending me pictures from your boat, trying to make me jealous. Well, guess what? You're successful. Appreciate that.
Happy to do it. No, just finished off another Indy 500, and now, tonight, the Pacers are going to finish off the Knicks. And we're going back to the finals. So I am all jazzed up, excited to be talking to our guest and learning a little bit from him as well.
Yeah, man. You know what? Oh, I love about this whole Pacers Knicks series is for anybody who's my age. Okay. So a little older than Chad, a little less older than our guest, a little younger than our guest, is the old 90s Knicks Pacers, you know, playoffs with Reggie and Patrick Ewing. And, oh, God, those were great. This is kind of reminiscent of that a little bit, which has been fun. That's what's made it, you know, fun to watch.
It's
like we're reliving.
If you get a chance and you're a Pat McAfee fan, you don't have to be a Pacers fan. Please go on and watch the video of when they handed him the microphone. I was there Tuesday night and they hand him the microphone and I'll just leave it at that. You've got to go listen to what he said in front of the entire crowd.
I saw the clip. Oh, it was amazing. Amazing. Well, for all those that could give two shits about the Pacers or the Knicks, we'll go ahead and move forward. But you know, it's great because our guests, you know, I'm glad to finally get him on here. A lot of people are going to be excited to hear Daryl talk about. I mean, this guy worked with two of the industry titans between George Brazil and Paul Kelly. We love PK here at To The Point. Speaking of which, PK texted me last night looking for Terry Nicholson's cell phone number. So I wonder what those boys are up to.
Who knows?
We're going to find out. I said, well, what's going on, buddy? Well, you need Terry's number for it. Here you go. But excited to have Daryl on here just to share his experiences 30 years, I guess, in the industry now, which is, 80% of Chad's lifetime. So, but listen, before we get into this, Daryl, it's important that you know that, one of the things that the listeners get the most benefit from on this podcast, like of all the 5 years I've been into it, is my dad jokes. It's the most important thing to do. So I don't want to miss out on doing it before I jump into a little bit more of how we've connected and then and a little bit of your history and what you'll be able to share with the listeners. So are you ready?
I am ready.
Listen, if you know the answers to these, you just speak up. Okay. There's no shame in knowing the answer. Okay. Chad, this is his favorite part of the podcast. So number one dad joke. What concert costs just 45 cents? What concert costs just 45 cents? You know, it's not Justin Timberlake concert, right, Chad? That was more than 45 cents.
Yeah.
Any idea what concert costs just 45 cents? It's a pretty cheap concert.
That is pretty cheap.
Nickelback?
50 cents. Oh. 50 cents featuring Nickelback.
Oh, okay.
Hey. All right. Get it?
I get it. I said that Nickelback.
That was a brain teaser, buddy. That was a brain
teaser. Tough math there, but I got it.
Brain teaser. Okay. I mean, you should know 50 Cent. I mean, you're a 21 Savage fan.
Yeah.
You know?
50 Cent. That was a hot jamming in high school. Right there. Takes me
Absolutely.
Back.
Absolutely. He was at the game.
Yeah.
He was at the
first tons.
Yeah, he was at the game.
Tons of celebrities there.
Yeah. Were you guys hanging down in the green room or whatever?
We were not. We were not. Didn't get that invite.
Oh, okay. All right.
Side rap going there or anything?
No, no. Yeah. Didn't ask me to do any of that. Little does he know. I'll go have a rap around.
You know, fun fact, since we're talking about 50 Cent, I just thought about this. You know, in my last days of trying to attempt to race the Indianapolis 500, 50 Cent was my sponsor. He had a company called SK Energy Shots, SK standing for Street Kings. The shot did not make it in the market, and nor did we get the funding to complete. But I got to do the testing with 50 Cent's face on the side of my car. Pretty cool.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty sweet.
Tied that right to that dad joke, didn't you?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it worked out great. I didn't even think about it until I did it. I was taking it on the fly. Holy shit, look at me, ready to go today. Okay, we're getting into two more. We got two more dad jokes, all right? I'm feeling really good about these, Chad. Really good. How did Burger King get Dairy Queen pregnant? Well, I mean, you've had to have thought about this before, right? This seems like a pretty logical thing to think about. How did Burger King get Dairy Queen pregnant?
I don't know.
This is definitely a borderline Wally joke. He forgot to wrap his Whopper. Hey! That's pretty good.
That was all right. I'll give you that one.
Okay, thank you. All right, last one, then we'll move on. I mean, I thought that one was going to be much better, but it kind of landed. What's what's 6 inches long and has two nuts at the end?
Does this tie into the Whopper joke?
Yeah.
What's 6 inches long and has two nuts at the end? Nobody?
Nobody.
All right, let's hear it.
An Almond Joy, you perverts. Jeez. Get your mind out of the gutter. An Almond Joy. By the way, I love those candy bars. Those things are good, but they don't put enough nuts on them for me, okay?
Yeah.
It needs to be about
two nuts
more.
Is all you get.
Two nuts is all you get. It's kind of a letdown. Okay. Whew. Got through those. Huh? What do you say, Chad? A little bit better? A little bit at risk?
You're getting stronger. That's good.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll keep working on it. I'll take that as a compliment. Okay, let's get to the fun stuff. All right, we got my good buddy Daryl Bingham on, president at Parker & Sons. Is that right?
That's correct.
President El Presidente, former ops manager over at George Brazil, if you ever heard of that small little company down here in the Southwest. We got to connect a little bit on the Cabo trip. We were down there on the Smart AC Cabo trip, and which was great. I don't think that he participated in the NAD plus IV thing. Were you doing
I was
that?
There.
Oh, you're on the couch with us
doing
that?
I was in the spooky room.
Okay, dear God.
Yeah.
So he was part of that little fun
near-death experience.
In Mexico, don't recommend doing that. At least you did it as a group, so we could have wiped out a whole bunch of industry folks.
Yes, absolutely. That was intimidating, to say the least.
Could have gotten interesting.
Lived through that one.
But tell you what, we were refreshed the next morning.
We were. It was a quick recovery.
It was. We also got to meet, I think we had met at one of the Clover Mastermind things. Mm-hmm. Probably maybe three. Were you there? Did I meet you the year that Rick Hutchison was there before he passed away?
No,
were
it was the year after that.
Yeah. Those are always fun with Josh and Laura's deals to be a part of and just kind of hang out with everybody. But it's always fun. I mean, we've had PK's been on here a few different times. Love that guy. One of my favorite human beings. He's one of the guys who could definitely outdance Chad on the dance floor, hard to do because he's pretty good dancer.
Got to check that one out.
Yep.
You got a video of that somewhere?
I got no moves like Paul's got.
Oh, come on. Yeah. Come on.
But it's always good to have someone who's actually, you know, in your seat right now running these big businesses too, and then being able to reflect on when you weren't working for big business or you weren't in the position that you are working in big businesses. So I want some of our listeners, you know, who've heard of, you know, Parker & Sons, who is, you know, a behemoth, you know, in the Southwest, I mean, really across the United States of America. And so is George Brazil. It was like another, you know, company that paved the way, you know, in the home services space. But let's just talk a little bit about your journey. Maybe for our listeners, let's just maybe share a little bit of, let's start with the end. let them know for those, some people who don't know who Parker & Sons is, maybe what size of business Parker & Sons is today. And then let's work your way back from your George Brazil days into like kind of what were your roles there. Maybe share the size of George Brazil, because there's some people probably have no idea who that is, which would be weird, but let's just assume some people don't know. And then just like, hey, whenever I came into Parker, you know, we were X, you know, size-ish. And then, you know, today it's wherever. So just so people can understand what you did in the journey and what the size of the businesses were on that journey. Is that cool?
Yeah. Yeah. If questions along the way, just prompt me and, you know, I'll fill in some detail of it. But, you know, I moved into the president seat here at Parker & Sons back in 2020, which wasn't a very significant year at all to take over the reins.
Lucky.
When Paul very timely moved to a regional CEO position
stage
within
Wrench.
He's really good about, you know, feeling the vibes of what's coming and saying, hey, you know what? I don't know what's coming, but something's coming. And why don't you take over? So that was quite the experience to, you know, be in the seat of a very large company. As the pandemic rolled in, I can remember a lot of the uncertainty, you know, in March of 2020 when, you know, it's all history now, but at the moment, it was unwritten of, you know, what that future would look like, and making some leadership decisions and rallying the team around what the, you know, potential prospects were going to be. And we, you know, played some cards very well at that time, and had a lot of success over the last 5 years since then. Currently today, Parker & Sons, you know, we do multi-trades, plumbing, air conditioning, electrical. We also have a pretty high, a very large water treatment division. We do blowing and insulation. And last year I started up a solar division. Collectively between here and Tucson, we are roughly around $250 million in gross revenue. And we've steadily been able to grow that, you know, over the, I've been with them now about 13 years after leaving George Brazil. So that translates to about just under 600 some odd, you know, technician trucks rolling around every single day. We got some fun stats with it. You know, we drive, we put a lot of miles on the valley here on a daily basis, as you can imagine. We've exceeded it now, but kind of a fun fact, you know, we'll drive more than 25,000 miles a day here in Phoenix, which is roughly the circumference of the earth. So we have the claim of being able to drive around the world every day without ever leaving Phoenix, just to kind of put something in perspective.
I just think about the dollar sign attached to that.
It's a large fuel bill, I can tell you that. We get a little bit of reprieve now, but a couple of years ago, you know, writing $500,000 for a fuel bill in a month is a different level of you know, trying to manage that process. We have a great management team that continues to, you know, pivot through some of the current challenges that we're seeing, you know, this year and last year, specifically around air conditioning, is the whole, you know, market shift to the A2L, and so much of this is really, you know, we're seeing a major change in the HVAC industry right now, and trying to navigate through that while still, again, trying to grow a business, be successful, maintain margins, the whole nine yards. So, yeah, that's kind of been my role for the last 5 years in managing and operating a very large size business and figuring out how to try to continue to get it to grow. Yeah, the architecture of what that looks like. You know, we're just in one location here in Phoenix. We opened up a branch in Tucson 3 years ago. We had some rapid growth there, which is what we like to do. They'll do about $25 million in revenue last year. In just a three-year startup, we had felt like we had some pretty good success from that.
Is Tucson have all the same trades as Phoenix?
They issue the three trades down there: plumbing, air conditioning, electrical.
Got it. As big as you guys are here in Phoenix, how much market share do you think you guys actually have?
If you've been listening to this show, you'll know that I only talk about tools that actually help our team. And Bluon is definitely one of those. At Peterman Brothers, our techs are using Bluon every single day. It's become their go-to resource. It really is like having a senior tech in your pocket. They can scan a unit, get all the model data, wiring diagrams, parts, and even troubleshoot with Bluon's AI. We've seen fewer callbacks, faster fixes, and happier techs. And that's why I'm such a big believer in Bluon, because it actually works. So do yourself a favor, click on the link in the description and book a quick demo with the Bluon team to see it in action.
I mean, we're just touching double digit right now. If we had 10%, maybe 9%, I mean, Phoenix is a very large market.
Right.
It's highly fragmented, obviously. There's thousands of contractors here. And so it's kind of tough to gauge market share,
right,
but you know, I think we're about 1.1, 1.2 million homes, roughly in, you know, our market space in Phoenix. So you can kind of get an idea of how many homes you touch on an annual basis to gain what that market share looks like. Yeah. But yeah, it's probably somewhere in that 8, 9, or 10%.
Yeah. Chad, you ever think about that with Peterman Brothers? Like, because it, you know, to the outsider it might seem like, oh my gosh, these guys have majority market share in this, you know, like they're probably own 30% of this, 40% of this market. And you're like, no, actually they're probably way less than that. Cause I don't know that anybody that I know of is, I mean, this is one of the largest businesses is touching double digits. Like there's so much open market, you know, and a lot of our listeners are living in that market, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's just it. Again, there's just a lot of competition in the Phoenix market. It's, we're about the 10th largest, maybe 11th largest, metropolitan, in the United States. And of course, you know, Phoenix is a great place for air conditioning, as we'll find out here next month. Arizona is not one of those places that you don't go without air conditioning. It's a necessity here, which is nice for being in that business. But it also draws a lot of competition because of the high demand that exists here.
Yeah, well, we're already kind of hitting it. I know because I'm already experiencing it in my house.
Yeah. Hey, Daryl, I think I want to kind of dive into the Tucson because I feel like the in vogue thing is to start a new location and so on and so forth. Obviously, you guys were, as you said, you were less than 10% of the market share, but still a very big company in Phoenix before you decided to move to Tucson. What were some of the things that you guys thought about as you tried to take over a new market? And I've made the drive from Phoenix to Tucson. Not a whole lot in between there. It's pretty, I think I'm out in the desert. Hopefully I got plenty of gas. But like when you guys were starting that new market, what were some of the things you were like, hey, this is our strategy going in. And then maybe on the flip side of that, like some things that you guys thought that maybe didn't work when you went in, if you look back at when you started.
Yeah. So, you know, when we look to expand into a new market, which is kind of the thing, and you know, we first looked for acquisition opportunities to see if there were a way we could, you know, leverage growth in that marketplace. 3 years ago, if you, you know, staying up with the times, you know, the cost of acquisition was at a peak. And so trying to find value in an acquisition, wasn't the option. So we went with what they call the greenfield process and start from scratch. We knew we had a strong brand under Parker and Sons, but Phoenix is in a different DMA. And so there was a little bit of residual, you know, 90 minutes south of Phoenix, but it certainly didn't have resonance with the brand. So we knew we'd have some challenges in growing a new company under that brand. But we had a lot of good marketing pieces in place that we knew would be relevant. There's some very solid companies that have been down there for a long time, so we knew we'd have some very entrenched competition that we would have to go up against. Rightway is the main player in the Tucson area. They run a great company down there and have grown it to very large size for that marketplace. So, you know, we knew who our lead competition was that we would be up against. But we really just focused on knowing that we have some great business practices. We know how to run business. We know how to take care of customers. And we just wanted to really just replicate that process in the Tucson market. And it's, it's worked well for us. We went down with a little bit of maybe over ambition in trying to start all three trades simultaneously. that was very painful for me. And I pivoted very quickly away from that and said, hey, I just got to kind of focus on one at a time. So that caused a little bit of resistance for me to begin with. We delayed our plumbing start after a couple months, realizing that it's just too much resources too quickly when you're trying to grow rapidly from zero. And our goal was to go from zero to 25 million in annual sales in a 3-year period. So that was what we set out to do, and we accomplished the goal we set out to do. But when you're trying to grow that fast across three trades, it was just too many distractions. So we retracted from that, focused on air conditioning, got it set up. Then we focused on electrical, which is a good complement to that, and felt like there was less competition in electrical in the marketplace than plumbing, and it proved to be the case. So we were able to gain some traction on that side of it. And then about a year in, we added the plumbing side of it once we had some established management practices and some started to get some customer base in place.
How do you look at, like, when you're starting, because I hear all sorts of different numbers. Obviously, there's the, 8 to 10% of marketing is, of revenue is what you want to spend on marketing. How did you guys think about that going into a new location? Did you guys up that percentage? And I'm guessing you're doing it off projected revenue. How did you guys think about the marketing play of that?
We did. I mean, there was an investment process in starting a startup. Your objective isn't necessarily to be profitable in the first 3 years. Your objective is to go establish a management team, establish a customer base, establish a technician base and practices, so then you can then leverage that profitability off of it once you get that establishment. So we knew, if you're doing it in a comparison aspect, if I was going to do an acquisition at the time, you'd be spending, $20+ million to go out and buy a $25 million business. So, from my perspective, I look at that as if I can greenfield this for anything less than that, then that is advantage, to the investment. And we were able to do it considerably less, but we did spend a lot from a percentage on marketing. I mean, we were probably the 15+% knowing we were trying to get it down to roughly 8%, once we got some better, brand awareness in the marketplace. But yeah, you got to go in planning on spending some money up front, to buy market awareness, and be able to, your brand isn't very relevant. So your cost per lead is very high. Once that brand relevance starts to take a little bit of traction, and that's been dropping down and we're seeing some better results.
Yeah. I think that's similar advice that I give to people. It's like, you can do an acquisition and that's kind of the shiny ball of like, oh, we acquired a company. But I think you got to look at it from a greenfield perspective of, okay, comparison. If I greenfield this and I don't have to go through all of the hard, like, integration and changing people and losing technicians and all of this, if I build it from scratch, can I build it for less than what I would have to acquire? Yes, if I acquire, I get there kind of day one, but there's a whole lot of heavy lifting and integration. Whereas I'm guessing starting a new location, there's a lot less integration because, you're probably taking people from Phoenix and moving them to Tucson to start this thing up and, bringing on people and they fall right into your process. So I think that squares up with how I kind of think about it as well.
A lot of the success of it was that we leveraged our shared services from our Phoenix base. So we kept, call center or marketing, all of our operations, really all of our accounting, centralized in the operation we already had.
Right.
So we really just needed our field operations stood up in that, in the Tucson area. So that gave us a much bigger advantage than trying to just greenfield everything, from scratch. This was just really an extension of what we were doing here. And that allowed us to really leverage that.
A couple things that I was thinking about, I'm going to kind of go off script a little bit, but because Chad asked the question, one thing that's always blown, I just made an announcement yesterday, an official announcement that I was able to, my wife and I and the Yano Group were able to invest in one of our new sponsors on the podcast, Prolific Brand Design Company. And one of the things that I think about was when you go into Tucson, was there ever any thought, like, if you've not seen the Parker and Sons brand, like when you look at all these brands, like, cause there's, you know, these truck wraps and stuff have kind of gotten nutty and crazy. It's not like this is some like blow your mind. It's just so, and yet it works. It's still so basic and it works so well. And hopefully we can throw a picture of like one of the vans or something up on the video, to edit that thing in there, but just so everybody can see it. But was there any consideration to like updating that thing going into the new market? Like, was it, cause that has, that's a shitload of trucks to rewrap. That's a lot of expense too.
You know, we've kind of had that same brand look for a long time now,
as long
you
know, as I know
20
yeah.
plus years.
Yeah.
And so there was some thoughts of, hey, do we use this kind of the catalyst to rebrand and refresh? But there is a simplistic nature of, the brand that we have, if you can see it, at some point, where it is just a really, you know, it's just a real simple, clean look. It's worked well with us. So as we tried to reconsider some different, rebranding, we fell back to just, you know, let's keep with what works. You know, the Tucson market for the most place, for the most part, this was a new brand. So we didn't feel like, you know, we needed to upgrade it to represent that in Tucson because the simplistic nature of our logo and just what we look, the truck look, would be new to that marketplace. And so far, so good.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, I've obviously...
But we did consider it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, I just think about that. Yeah. I was actually listening to the founder of Prolific speak at one of the events a few weeks ago, and he had mentioned how successful the brand has been without there ever being like... a character or a hero or anything attached to it. Like I remember what's the cowboy guy's name that was on there?
Vince.
Yeah. And seeing him on there and then seeing, yeah. So, I mean, like it's just, but it was very simple, but it works. And so, fun fact is down there, you know, I've competed down there for quite a while. Rick Rightway was my client for 5 years. So from 19 all the way through 24, great partnership with those guys. And they became part of Legacy Service Partners. Good dudes. I've been able to be with them through that ride.
Yeah, they're really good dudes.
I mean, Gettle, another one I competed with. Like, you've got some players down there any hour. Another one that I've had to, you know, so I've competed down that market successfully for quite a while. Only person that has like Gettle probably is the only brand with the, you know, that has the brand story, the flashlight piece, you know, to the whole Ken's story. Rightway was always like pretty straightforward, basic, like nothing major down there. Just kept like chipping away and chipping away and chipping away at the market. So I started thinking about, well, like who actually has like the big standout brands in that Tucson market? It just seems like it's just kind of wide open. There's a lot of white space in front of us. So, I just was curious about the branding question in general, because I feel like that has to come up, and hopefully we showed a picture of that, you know, in the video so people could see it.
Yes. Yeah, it's real. I mean, it's simple, but a lot of the success we have had at Parker and Sons to, you know, in the really, you know, mammoth growth that we've taken place is focusing on simple things that we can get really good at, that we can, you know, really leverage, that process. You know, been in the industry a long time and seen a lot of different, complicated processes, from commission plans to advertising. I will say that, you know, and one of the I learned from Paul, was, you know, to really just try to keep things simple. And as we kind of built that into our culture, it has allowed us to really leverage something simple. It is, when you're trying to train 600 people on a process, it's a challenge. And so the simpler the process can be, the faster I can replicate it across a larger network. The more complicated it is, the longer, you know, runway you need to get anything implemented. And the success in our businesses, you know, comes from quick, consistent implementation and training of whatever the process is.
Question. This is a question for both of you guys. I don't know if you've experienced this, but I've definitely experienced it, you know, in our growth, because we've become a pretty decent sized business. You guys feel like you ever maybe it's not you directly, but it's whoever you have in a leadership role starts to overcomplicate processes. Like, we've now overcomplicated the simplest things.
Constantly.
Yeah.
Every day.
You know, change is inevitable.
Like, there's sometimes I look at some of our processes, I'm like, I don't even know who to go to get my own problem fixed. So I'm having to ask somebody who runs this problem, like, and how did it get here? Like, why is there's like five steps in this process when it used to be one step?
I think that's just a byproduct of growth. As you grow, you need new processes. And then when you go to redevelop the process, you've got somebody new that you've added to management and that growth, and they've got to put, you know, their signature on it. And that just tends to start bloating processes inherently. And so it is one of, our traits that we are constantly trying to simplify processes. And you can have a complicated SOP on a simple process so that you can train on it well. But at the core, trying to find ways to really keep things very simple is essential if you're trying to get, some rapid growth and large scale growth. You can't do that with complicated processes.
Yeah. I mean, for us, it's always been like, I feel like a lot of our processes get complicated because you're trying to wrangle in so many people. And yeah, you've got the good guys. They can follow the process. They've been here a long time. They're good at it, whatever. But you start bringing in this influx of new people and like trying to get them to all do it. You basically create a process to where everybody is going to have to do 18 different things in order to see it through. And so what we've really tried to do in a lot of our processes, because I feel like where they get complicated is when the office staff creates them to make their life easier. When at the end of the day, we should be trying to make the technician's life as easy as possible. And so I have a lot of things where I'm like the process. I hate SOP. I mean, I understand the importance of SOPs, but I hate them. It's like, let's operate. Like, we should be able to do this easily. It's bringing the field and the office together to kind of explain the why around why we have this process. I was in a meeting earlier today about our procurement process, which sucks. And it's like, crap. Like, well, we have to do these 10 things. Like, what's the easiest way to do them? And what makes the technician's life harder? And how do we make this simpler? And so I've found as we've grown, we've gotten back to like how we used to do it. It's like, we used to do it this way. And then we created this big process and it got really complicated. And now let's just go back to the way that we used to do it. And everybody's like, well, why'd we change? And it's like, well, there's a number of different reasons, but let's get back to super simple. But I think getting the field's perspective, I think, has been kind of our... It's our goal, but it's also how we fix things because we need their perspective on what sucks out there and how can we make it better.
Yeah. How long did it take you to start to wrangle that back in?
Too long.
Like, could you tell when it was starting to get out of control? Like, you could kind of tell, but it's like also hard to wrangle it back
in. Yeah. So we started this thing where our COO does a town hall with all the technicians just virtually every first Friday of the month, where he just gets in front of the technicians and it's kind of like explaining like some changes that are coming up and this is what's happening. And then just leaves it as an open forum of like, hey, tell me what's not going right. Now, a lot of those things, if they give us 10 things that aren't going right, six of them are simply a misunderstanding of like, well, hold on a second. Why do you think it has to go that way? Well, no. And usually you'll get other techs that'll chime in like, no, you don't do it like that. Do it like this. It's super simple. So they end up helping each other out. And then there's probably four things that are like really good feedback of like, oh crap. Yeah. Let's dive in and fix that. So again, soliciting that feedback, but yeah, I mean, we started those back November of last year and they've been super impactful. What we've seen is like the complaint section of the meeting has started to go down because we're fixing the things. Like, these are the things that they want fixed. Okay, cool. We can dive right in and get that done. And it's usually a super simple fix. It's not like, oh, this is going to be a 6-month project.
Well, so what I'm hearing you say is this is going to be a constant problem as you scale. At least now I kind of know what to look for a little bit. Like,
I said, I do think it's a byproduct of growth and you know, growth ebbs and flows. And when you're in a high growth period, you have to react quickly to that. And so you do you're putting different processes out there. They do tend to get overcomplicated. And then as you stabilize a little bit in the growth and you review the process and go, hey, how can we trim this back? How can we make this simpler? What technology potentially can we use to streamline the process? But yeah, it's essential, especially if you've, when you're trying to manage large volume of anything. In our case, it's just large volume of work, technicians, call volume, trying to keep things simple is essential.
Good. So anybody who's been experiencing some rapid growth and you're just trying to do your best and make the best decisions quickly, hang in there.
Yes.
It's all part of the process. That's what I'm hearing.
There'll be some little ebb. And as soon as there is, make sure you're circling back to simplify your processes.
Take note of the things that you're recognizing that are broken in the process. Go back, revisit them. I just did like one of our little micro episodes on that, like what you learn, you know, in the busy season, you work on in the shoulder season, like some of the things that you learn, like, oh shit, that was broken, or oh, this is, you know, maybe you can't fix it right in the moment, but make sure you make note of that so you can go back and revisit it when you do start to slow down a little bit.
I like to tell my people, you know, this is a sophisticated business. And so we have sophisticated processes. That doesn't necessarily mean they have to be complicated processes. We keep things simple, but again, if you're going to continue to advance and be a leader in your industry, you have to have a level of sophistication in really everything that you do. And so we try to focus on, you know, a really sophisticated process that we can implement very simply.
Got it. Okay. So I'm going to, just for the sake of time, pivot back to a little bit of what we're talking about. Cause I think, you know, most of our listeners, as you know, Darryl, I was telling you ahead of time, you know, there's a lot of just guys trying to figure it out who are smaller still. You know, significantly smaller than you guys. And, you know, I was talking to you about this before the podcast, but you know, since we're kind of talking about marketing and kind of talking about going into Tucson as a, you know, as a green field and not just, you know, acquiring another business, how, like, I'm curious from your position in your seat at one of the largest, I mean, we're talking, it was single market, you know, company, you know, HVAC, plumbing, electrical companies. How do these little guys compete against you? You guys have so much leverage. You got brand power. You have the money to build the capital to do it. You've got so much talent, leadership on that entire Wrench team, just not just Parker, but a Wrench as a whole. How do these little guys compete against big guys like you? I mean,
you know, I guess it depends on what level of competition, right? there are some advantages. We were just talking about it, right? When I need to roll something out, I need to roll it out to 600 people and get compliance on it. And we all know the 80-20 or 70-30 rule, you know, that 30% of my guys are going to get it real quick. 70% of them I'm going to take 3 or 4 attempts before they can, you know, master whatever it is that we're trying to roll out. You do that, you know, with, again, 600 or 700 people, your rollout time is very lengthy. You get a small shop that's got, you know, 25, 30 technicians. They can pivot and implement things a lot faster than we can. And so I think that's an advantage for them. We certainly feel that as a disadvantage when we want to do something simple, frustrating us all get out, because, I mean, I got to go through a planning session. I got to go through like all kinds of things. Sometimes the idea I've come up with to implement it, I'm already bored of my idea before I can even get it implemented because it can take so long. So those are some of the challenges of the large company being able to maintain that I think the smaller companies, you know, certainly have an advantage to make some quicker movements against us. There are certain segments of marketing, I think, that if you're only trying to focus on, you know, a smaller lead flow that you can dominate, especially now, I think, on some social channels and social media, where the needed volume for that smaller business can be derived from a concentrated effort in a certain social channel. For me, We have such a large lead flow, you know. I mean, I need about 1,400 calls a day. And so just, you know, try to wrap your mind around the constant marketing that happens. So we've got to go for channels that are very large that gets me volume. And when, you know, we miss out on being able to kind of do community-targeted marketing, where smaller companies, I think, have an advantage over us if they really stay focused on, you know, the areas they can dominate in, these little micro channels of marketing. And we've seen some smaller companies do very well And I get jealous of it, honestly. And I go to my marketing team and say, how is this small little company out marketing me in, you know, over here? I see their ads, you know, three or four times more than mine. It's like, well, it's because we're spending all this over on, you know, these other large broadband channels. So I do think there are some advantages that if they stay focused in these, you know, kind of little micro marketing areas, they can dominate in them where they really, you know, would be challenged to compete against us at the broadband marketing level to, you know, have relevance because we are able to dominate that at the volume that we're in.
I think that's good advice. And they maybe have not overcomplicated their processes yet.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Another advantage. But sometimes they miss out on some of the sophistication that is that you need to refine in order to push things out and operate at the level we're at too. So there's a little balance.
So Daryl, one question I think, and this kind of goes for, I think where smaller guys can really, you know, kind of maximize their opportunity. I would assume that you adding other services, you said solar most recently, you mentioned water treatment, which I know when I was out at your place a couple of years ago, you were like, look at this big barn of softeners we got. That I'm like, oh my God, I'd love to move that many. How are you, you got a massive customer base. Like what are some of the things that even if you're, you know, even if you got four techs that you guys are doing that are kind of those blocking and tackling things still that you found that work of like maximizing that customer base, cross-selling across, you know, different trades. Like what do you guys do to make that like come to fruition, to be able to take advantage of the people that already know, like, and trust you?
Well, I mean, that has been a big part of our growth success and growth strategy is being able to maximize our relationship with the customer. And so strategically, when I started there, we were just a plumbing and air conditioning company. And since then, we've added a variety of different trades to that in an effort to maximize that relationship with it. And a lot of that comes from cross-selling. And we, you know, we work with our customer relations when they call in on the call center. We have a very aggressive process in being able to try to, you know, turn one call into two by, you know, some relatively simple scripts of asking if there are any other issues that they have in their home. And we do a very good job of, you know, internally marketing our customers while they're calling us in for one service and trying to get, you know, an opportunity for a secondary service. We also do the same thing with our in-home representatives. We've got a large cross-selling process in place that incentivizes and pays out, you know, spiffs to the technicians for advertising, if you would, or setting leads for other departments. It's a really critical function of what we do to be able to feed these other auxiliary departments, you know, insulation particularly. We do very little advertising for it. We've stood that whole division up really through internal marketing to our existing customers and through lead setting opportunities with our technicians in the field.
Did you say insulation?
I did, yes. Blown in insulation.
Peter, did you know he did insulation?
Yep.
Son of a... We've been trying to roll that in, implement that into our roofing business over in Indianapolis. I don't know how it's going, but that came from Chad, but you guys aren't doing that at Peterman Brothers, right?
Well, that's my next question for someone who succeeded at it. When you decide to, cause I failed at this a couple of times, when you decided to start insulation, like it's one thing to just say to your HVAC techs, you know, pop your head up in the attic, see if they've got insulation. You can use a ruler, or, you know, they got all those fancy things. Hey, you don't have enough insulation, and you set that lead. How did you go about setting up that? Was that an investment? Like, hey, I need a leader of this department and, you know, obviously the crews to put it in and all this stuff, but like someone who, hey, here's your budget. Here's how many here you're going to be in charge of, you know, talking to the techs about the importance of insulation. Like how did that division come to be, I guess?
In home services, speed to lead is everything. Chirp stands out by transforming your communication strategy. With Chirp, accelerate your lead response time with instant SMS text messaging, email, and ringless voicemail automation. Chirp's cutting-edge technology ensures you're the first and the most persistent, helping you close more deals than ever. But that's not all. Say goodbye to missed opportunities with Chirp's incredible follow-up system. Keep your leads engaged and moving smoothly through your sales funnel without lifting a finger. And with your deep integrations with top CRMs like ServiceTitan, HouseCall Pro, and Jobber, you can launch laser-targeted campaigns to connect with the exact right leads at the exact right time. Automation creates efficiency. Efficiency unlocks scalability. With Chirp, you can automate speed to lead, estimate follow-ups, rehash, abandoned call follow-ups, canceled job follow-ups, review requests, outbounding to your list, annual reminders, membership expiration follow-ups, and so much more. So stop chasing leads, capture them. Connect faster and close more deals with Chirp. Contact Chirp today and elevate your communication game.
You get big by thinking big. So any division I've opened, you know, I have a large plan set out before we do it. I don't really get excited to start a division unless it's going to be a $10 million division. It's kind of, you know, if I can't do that, then it's, you're not going to, in my experience in the past, I wasn't successful. So at some point I pivoted towards and say, if we're going to do it, you know, let's set this up as a $10 million division. That way it's kind of just a round number where I know I can afford overhead structure around it, be able to pay for it. So yes, I can go out and find a driver for that, new division. I can hire, a management structure around it so that, we're not trying to do it as a, side gig out of our HVAC business. If you want to be successful at it, like I said, you kind of have to think big and you have to set it up, you know, with that in mind. We've done that with electrical. We're probably one of the largest electrical divisions in the Valley as well. And so we try to dominate with each trade we come in, within 2 or 3 years. We've got 7 blow-in insulation vehicles that we run around. We do 10 plus million in insulation alone right now. And again, that kind of came because that was the whole begin with the end in mind concept. And that was our goal, and we drove towards that. That is an important part of it. If you want to dive into it, you got to be committed to dive all the way.
Makes sense.
Chad, don't be trying to take this back to Peterman Brothers, okay? This is a Redbird Roofing deal.
Okay. Water treatment is my number one. Like I've got to figure out plumbers. Like, yeah, they'll offer a softener, but like that's the one that I'm trying. It could be, I mean, there's Culligan's and all of the world. There's all these places that all they do is sell softeners. Like, we've got to be able to do this.
Kind of the same thing. And until we broke it out of our plumbing division and said, we're going to set our sights on a 10 million water sales division, for us to be able to afford a driver of that department and have it function, like you said, in competition with the Kinetico or the Culligan, and not just a, hey, let's just, you know, have a plumbing company that sells a lot of water treatment systems. Let's have a water treatment division that we can then hold them accountable for the numbers that we want to accomplish. And we do a lot of lead setting from our plumbing department to our water sales department. And that took a fair amount of time and energy to kind of set that handshake process up. And there's always the argument that, you know, that is plumbing and it is a kind of a subdivision of our plumbing. But when we were able to get dedicated management for it, and then dedicated numbers that says, this is what you need to do, and then hold them accountable for it, the investment pays off.
Yeah. And you probably have you're probably doing a lot of existing client nurturing, cross-selling across existing customers too, on some of these services, like, you know, add-on is water treatment, EO, whatever, or RO, but you're doing some sort of ongoing marketing to the existing customer base to, you know, when you're rolling, you're bringing on a new service, right?
Yeah. In fact, when we're bringing on a new service, we can use that kind of from the excitement of, hey, you know, let's talk to the 100,000 customers we have and say, you know, here's a new service and here's some new promos that are running with it, and try to gain some, you know, rapid awareness with that. And then, that period can last a good year or two, being new, and then we can get in some consistency once we've kind of branded that to our client base. But just like you weren't aware we did insulation, there probably still is a large portion of our customer base that doesn't know we do insulation, because it is a large effort to brand a new trade to the Parker & Sons brand, not just to the general public, but to your own customer base as well. We like to think that they read everything that we send to them. But the reality is, you know, they really don't care that much about, you know, the home service provider that they have, even if they, you know, even if they're partnered with us, if you would, on a maintenance plan, they really want to ignore us until they need us. And so it's difficult to proactively get any message in front of them that resonates, that says they're going to remember, oh yeah, they do insulation. When I think I might need that, I'll call them. And insulation being one of those that is, there is no demand around it. You really have to spur that conversation with every customer.
I've gotten the insulation quote before for my house last year. And I didn't like it because I wasn't expecting. I was like, holy shit, how much to re-insulate
my house? You got too much house, Chris.
What do I need that for?
It's not their price, it's your house. You got too much house.
That's fair. It's a lot of insulation. Yeah. But point is I was like, oh shit, that was like a $30,000 insulation job. Yeah. I was like, say what the fuck? I was like, I just replace this one. Anyway, it was crazy. Well, you said something. And the reason I was asking that question was you cross-marketing to your existing customer base is you can do that at any size of business. You should be doing that. It's obviously low cost per lead.
Referral. Yeah.
So you should be doing those things. And you're right. You also mentioned one thing that I just took a note of is – they're not, you know, not everybody's opening your emails and reading them anyhow, right? So I just introduced Chad to this guy I met maybe a few months ago. I don't know, Chad, if you guys have met with Zach or not yet, but I'm going to brag on this dude for a second. Didn't know he did it, but he's running email marketing campaigns for contractors, small little boutique guy, just found a skill, built his own little AI tool, was launching emails, you know, across your customer base and was really trying to drive open rate because that's usually the pain in the ass is like, they're not opening it. We're sitting in like 10, 15%, maybe 20% open rates. Well, shit, if there's nobody's opening it, it's kind of pointless, right? So you're just sitting, and now you're like, and not going into their spam, you know, is a whole nother thing. So this kid, like I say kid, it's so weird to say, he's like 30 years old. That makes me feel old.
I'm Chad's kid too, though.
Chad's kid too, yeah.
But you're a kid.
Thank you. Appreciate that. This dude's getting like 30, 40, 50% open rates. And so I was like, seems fishy. Like that doesn't happen. So I had him open up his account and he was in here. And I was pursuing him, you know, to potentially acquire his company and then rolled into this prolific brand design business that I bought. So he showed me this thing and no shit, like 30, 40, 50, even in the 60% open rates. I'm like, how are you doing this? And then what's the actual lead quality attached to it? Like, I'm thinking, is it like, what are you saying to get them to open it? That's one thing, but are they actually taking action? Well, he's like, yeah, well, they're tied to Service Titan. So let me just pull you into their Service Titan account. I'm like, so you can see the revenue attached to it. I'm like, this dude's figured some things out. You imagine if you just took your existing customer base, regardless of what size you are, and now you're going from a 10%, you know, email, 20% email open rate to 50, 40, 50%. That's a hell of a lift on revenue, especially if you're small and you need the revenue. So it's such a good tool that I never even think about because Rhino doesn't even offer it. I wouldn't even offer it because it's just something we've thought about. And now I'm like, well, maybe we should start paying a little closer attention to email marketing again because it's so inexpensive to do it.
Well, you know, particularly, and we talk a lot about demand service and opportunity service. And, you know, demand service, obviously, you know, that allows us to typically acquire new customers through demand service. It's something that is what we're in business for. But, you know, demand service is a very erratic aspect. You don't know any given day how many water heaters are going to fail or how many toilets are going to clog or how many air conditioners are going to are not work. And I've got a static workforce that I have to keep busy. And so we're constantly engineering our call volume on a daily basis in this blend between what we predict we're going to get in demand. And this is for all trades. And then augmenting the difference of that prediction with our opportunity calls. And so the need for opportunity calls is huge in managing these service businesses if you're going to be able to have any level of growth. Because if you're only ever hiring to demand, then there is no opportunity for growth, because demand will come, and then what? You're going to hire. By the time you hire, the demand isn't there. And then you got people sitting around with nothing to do. Yeah. And so that's why, you know, if you can really balance out and get really good at predicting what demand is going to be and then augmenting that with opportunity, I know I can hire 10 more people and keep them busy because I know I have the ability to gain these opportunity calls. Yeah. And what you're talking about through emailing your customer base, those are typically opportunity calls you're looking for.
There's some predictability to it though, right? Just based on your past experience. Like, okay, we expect it should bring in this range of business for us.
Oh yeah. And we get pretty accurate at predicting what, our marketing is going to bring in. And we have a fairly complex metrics of, you know, for each trade is slightly different because, the what causes demand is different for it. Obviously air conditioning, we watch the temperatures. We see what 100 degree day did, last week. We see what, last Monday was and what the temperature was. And it's a little, metrics that we use for being able to do that prediction. And we get pretty accurate at it. And every once in a while I get thrown off on it. But the point being is that once you understand that, if you want to grow your business, then you just grow your opportunities. Cause you can, they really fill in the gaps. But this email marketing and, being able to tap your customer base, you're not really looking for demand calls. Cause if you send me an email, if my water heater is not leaking, the email's not going to be any good.
Yep.
But if you get an opportunity for, like a drain and flush service or some proactive aspect, or a new product that you're trying to sell that, that they can add to what they're doing now instead of when it breaks, those are what I refer to as opportunity calls. And, if you get good, at that, and if you can get 50% open rates, that makes it much easier to leverage those type of calls with your customers. And those are really, high sales opportunities more than they are like a service opportunity. Unless you're just trying to leverage some maintenance, you get good at that. And that's where a lot of the growth can come from.
Yeah. And what I was getting to with that is Rhino doesn't even offer it as a service, right? Because I don't even think about it. And yeah. I'm like, well, shame on me because I've been thinking about chasing this LSA, PPC, like it's a whole other.
Which is all the demand work.
AI. Yes. That you forget about the simplest thing is email marketing. And so, hey, Ryan, when does this podcast air, by the way? Is this a couple weeks? 4 weeks? Perfect. So then I can make an announcement right here. I'm going to make an announcement live on To The Point Home Services Podcast. So, because it comes out after the announcement. So that guy offered him a position, and asked to bring his company on board into Prolific Brand Design, which we had just, acquired on April 30th, my birthday, to come in and lead it. So now we don't not only do the branding and the wrap designs and all that stuff, but now we also added email marketing. So I got him to join the team. So he's going to come in and be the president of Prolific Brand Design. But once he showed me that, and I was like, dude, first off, I was like, he's not charging enough. So I saw a major upside there. And then once
especially if he's getting 50% open rates or anywhere close to it.
So then I said to him, you should, everything I looked at, nothing was below a 30%, nothing. Most of it was in 40, 50%. And I said, you should add a guarantee to it. Like just say, hey, I guarantee it's 30% or higher on open rates or it's your money back. Do it. I bet you it wins 95% of the time, as it scales, something's going to miss, if they don't have the brand equity. Yeah. So I was like, do it. So I'm trying to talk him into just offering 30% plus guaranteed. And he will stack some clients with that. I'm like, so we need to be thinking how to scale this thing. But if you can just do something as simple as that, where the cost per lead is so, so low, if he's charging $1,500 a month and bringing in a 40, 50%. And now it's kind of on you and your team to execute, right? As long as the lead quality is good. So it's just, it took me back to grassroots. Sometimes we need to, get back to Chad's point, a little blocking and tackling some of the simple things where we're like, oh yeah, that should still work. We should probably focus on these types of things.
Yeah. Along with that is the SMS messaging.
100% text messaging is
great. Is another medium where we can talk to our customers on a platform that they want to respond onto.
We know real quick, I'll just throw this out there for our buddy, Chris Hoffman. You know, Chris? Hoffman Brothers over in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. He just launched this new newsletter. I don't know, Chad, if you saw his first one that came out, but it's called
Path Less Traveled.
The Path Less Traveled newsletter. We'll share it in the show notes too, so that way people can click on it. It's cool because he's sharing his like little $9 million to $200 million crazy journey that Hoffman Brothers has been on. You know, and he's like one of the sharpest dudes I know too, but sometimes like Chad and I, you know, laugh at each other because we sit and listen to him talk. And like, I'm 5 minutes in and I have no clue what the hell he's talking about. It's like so far over my head. And because I'm still thinking about this, I missed the rest of what he's saying. But it's cool that he's sharing like his entire journey in this little newsletter, the good, the bad, all of it, you know? So, you know, whenever we already had him on, but we'd have brought it up, but when, in the show notes, click on it, sign up for his newsletter. It's free. He's kind of dumping all of his knowledge into it, and he's still private. Well, he doesn't plan on being anything other than private. Kind of impressive. So we're getting really close to, you know, to the end of this podcast. So I want to make sure we hit on a couple more things, but before I hit on mine, Chad, do you have anything you want to ask him? Cause I've kind of took over for
now. I don't. I think this is all great stuff. Really appreciate you sharing, Daryl. I think this, I mean, a lot of people are probably on this podcast going, what in the hell can I learn from a guy running 250? But like, again, it's the same message over and over, regardless of the size of the company. It's all the little stuff that adds up, and you get really good at the blocking and tackling. And then all of a sudden you see this growth take place. It's, you know, Parker and Sons didn't find some magic bullet that just propelled them to these heights. It's they did all the little stuff and continue to do all the little stuff. So yeah, I think this is great.
That really is. I mean, all these businesses are the same. They're very transactional businesses. You know, you don't do 250 because you're doing a whole bunch of, you know, big project work or anything like that. You know, we're a strictly residential company. So, you know, we're doing just a lot of the same work that the little person, the little or smaller company is doing. We just do a much higher volume of it. And it does require a lot of getting really good at the, as you say, the block and tackling aspect so that you can handle the volume and, you know, it doesn't overwhelm you.
So let me finish with this. So I ran into you at the Linux dealer meeting, right?
Yeah.
Linux dealer meeting.
Literally ran into you.
Yeah, literally ran into you.
In your suitcase and I knocked you over.
Which is great. Kicked me all the ground. But, you know, like I mentioned before, you know, we were in Cabo together, which we did some training stuff down there. The Smart AC did their thing, which I know I think you guys have, or you guys are.
We are partnered with them, yeah.
Partnered with Smart AC. But then also at the Clover Mastermind. So do you still go to these things trying to, you know, constantly learn something new from somebody else, regardless of the size of the business?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I learned that from George. He started his business in 1955. I started working for him. I think he was 70. And he had been in business for 50 years. And he talked about these business cycles, right? Like, you know, and those can be like 10-year business cycles that you start to go, you know, like, hey, I made that decision already once. Why am I doing this again? And so, he talked about constantly learning. He was one of the founders of what was then was Contractors 2000, today Nextar.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of exposure from him during that time period to where it was all about, you know, I watched him at 80 years old, going to a seminar to, you know, continue to learn, even though he'd been in business for 50 years. And so, yeah, I don't think you can ever stop learning in this. The industry continues to change. Business practices continue to change. If you're not constantly, you know, sharpening your saw at whatever level you're at, then yeah, you're missing out.
Well, so then here's my follow-up to that. You know, you're part of the Wrench Group family, right? And there is there's a lot of incredible leadership talent in that family. You got what? Jamie DiDomenico, Jonathan Bancroft, Kevin Comerford, Alan O'Neill, Paul Keller. There's so much talent in there. Now, when you run into issues, like if you are things you're just trying to learn or questions you want to get answered, who's your go-to in that group? Or are they different go-tos for different situations? Like who are your go-to guys?
You know, it's kind of transitioning, right? You just named a lot of the powerhouses that, you know, started businesses and then merged them into the wrench group. You know, they are a great resource for us. But like Paul Kelly and Kevin and others who are kind of moving into you know, different roles after merging their business into it, they're great mentors, and I talk to them on a regular basis. But these businesses are always changing. And so, you know, being able to collaborate with, you know, Tony, who is the took Alan O'Neill's position there at Abacus in Houston, who's, you know, grinding out every day, trying to figure out, you know, the new way to stay successful in business, which we all are. And so being able to collaborate with some people that have just been in roles for, you know, a year. You know, Dan Mietzi took over for Kevin in Service Champs up there in Sacramento. Yeah. And, you know, he and I collaborate on a regular basis because, you know, again, it's very relevant of what's happening today. And so that's really what I, you know, where I gain a lot of it is like, hey, I'm dealing with this. What are you doing? Yeah, we're dealing with the same issue, right? Whether it's something changed in the industry, whether it's procurement issues, whether it's resistance to the, you know, the inflationary pricing that we've got on some, you know, equipment that we're trying to deal with. Being able to collaborate with somebody who's dealing with those same problems today is probably the highest value to me. I get all the great, you know, I got a lot of greats in my pocket for mentoring, when it comes for leadership or just inspiration that I need. But if I got an operational problem, I'll reach out to, you know, one or two or three different, current leaders that are running these, you know, $100 million businesses. And sometimes I learn a lot from the guys running a $30 million business. Cause it's like, you know, this is how we do it. Yeah, why don't I think of that? That's what I should be doing. I was trying to complicate it, you know, for my size. And actually, if I just did it that way, it'd be a lot simpler. So it's helpful to actually have a blend of it.
Yeah, I mean, good having good operators and that are actually operating these businesses today is a cool, like a little peer group to have access to.
Yeah, we're all kind of going through the same transition too, where, you know, we've they're well-established businesses that were run by, you know, very talented leaders. And so those businesses are now in their second chapter, if you would, with it, and being able to kind of take an existing culture and, you know, make it your own with a new leadership team and a new leader, and then, you know, take that culture and extend a new version of it without, you know, without necessarily changing it. You are changing it, but without losing what it started with, but changing it into something new to move it forward under different leadership. We're all kind of going through that same challenge. And so it's good to have resources.
We got
to
get some of them on this podcast, Chad.
We've had quite a few. Some we've had Kevin. We've had Jonathan. No.
I'm talking
it's the guys sitting in their seats.
Sorry. Yeah. I missed you there. Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. We got to get set. Actually, we just rolled out, JB's. I love Jonathan Bancroft. He's awesome. And Kevin did at Rhino X, which you've not been to yet. We got to get you to Rhino X. They did a little session where they just, you know, they questioned each other, which those two guys are great together.
They are, yeah.
I think they have their podcast that's out too. I think it's, I forget the name of it. I can't remember what the name of the podcast is.
Words of Wisdom.
Thank you. There it is. Words of Wisdom.
Wow.
That's great. Thank you for chiming in and helping me out there. But we rolled their session out as a podcast, which is cool. Because those guys were great. But I think it'd be good to bring some of those guys on here, especially, I mean, I know all the old guys, you know, all the old guys who built these businesses, but it would be good to bring in some of the current day operators in these things.
Like I said, the industry is always changing. You got new challenges today that we didn't have, you know, even just a year ago. And, you know, whether it's, you know, talent, which is getting far more sophisticated in where they want to work and how we navigate, you know, people that know their value, and how they negotiate, to, you know, hire these days. You know, there's just a lot of new things that are happening in our industry and be able to kind of talk about that. You know, it's a safe zone too, to some degree, because, most of them are, you know, sister companies in different marketplaces. Yeah. So, you know, we get a pretty high level of collaboration through it, but I can get you some referrals to some guys that, you can bring on the show.
Let's do it. Chad, what do you think about this? First off, let's do that for sure. So before you leave today, thankfully we have Daryl in studio here in Phoenix, Arizona. We should bring in Charlie Kirk and have him have a debate and bring in these current day operators and have them debate topics at the next Rhino X.
Like
what do you
think?
Yeah, well, that'd be fun. That'd be great, including Daryl. Daryl, you're in.
All right.
Okay.
Let's do it. I don't have to travel very far.
That's an easy one, for you, because I'm never changing location. It's got to be simple for me. It's already a pain in the ass to have it in the first place.
Yeah.
Well, listen, man, really excited to, you know, to finally get you on here too, and for to have you come in person. It's always good to sit, you know, face to face with somebody. But this is, I can't remember who it is that always tells me, you need to get some current day operators on here. It's probably Ishmael. I think it's probably him who tells me that. Get some current day operators in there.
He's a big fan of that concept. He loves the old guys, as he calls them.
So it must have been him that was busting my chops about it. But it does make a lot of sense, you know, because it's what we're dealing with currently today. And but I appreciate you giving the time, because I understand what the value of your time is, especially as we're creeping up into summertime here.
Yes, June is just around the corner here. We started this weekend,
and I'm hoping for a really gnarly summer for both of you guys.
Thank you.
I hope it gets really hot and nasty for a really long time. So
keep doing the heat dance for us, please.
It would certainly help me too, by the way. Yeah. So the hotter it can get in every single market, the longer, the better for all of us.
Yes.
So, but I appreciate you taking the time to hang with us for a bit and share with the listeners, and just sharing some of the things that you've been through your 30-year journey, and just being willing to, you know, pour into some of these people. Have you done any other podcasts before?
I've not, actually.
This is your first
this
one?
This is my first podcast. Shit. You guys broke me in.
Yes. Don't you feel I feel honored. I'm grateful to be your first. I've been a lot of firsts.
As a as a full-time operator of a very large business, this has never really been one of my priorities, but running into you in the invite, thank you very much. I've enjoyed my time here. Chad, great to talk
Good
with
talk
you again
to you.
And see you. So yeah, thanks for the invite. It was fun.
Yeah, well, you're pretty damn good at it. Like, I think you're pretty natural. By the guarantee, 100%. Chad's going to try and get you on Can Stop the Growth. I'm sure you're probably going to get invites to some of these other podcasts too. And then I'd be love to be the one who sends you on your merry way to do those things.
Well, thank you. Happy to share my success story that I've had with Parker & Sons and George Brazil, both two titan companies that I've been privileged to, operate and grow and learn from, really key people within our industry.
Yeah. Well, congrats on the success, man.
Thanks.
Kicking ass. And he's a good dude, good human being. So appreciate you sharing all that stuff with our listeners. And listen, we went a little over an hour on this episode, which we don't normally do unless it's really good shit. Okay. So this was good. This is good stuff.
Well, good to hear.
We actually covered quite a bit of different topics on this particular episode. So if you made it to the end, congratulations, because you probably took some good notes on this. If nothing else, you just said, okay, cool. They go through the same issues as we go through, just at a different scale. So, and get back to some grassroots shit. Okay. Make it easy.
That's it. Keep things simple.
Keep it simple. Yeah. Keep it simple. You don't got to do everything, but you got to do something. Isn't that right, Chad?
That is correct. No 0 days.